Good afternoon. My name is Martin Esther, and this is my partner in crime. I'm a professor of computer science at Simon Fraser University.
And I'm a postdoc in engineering science.
So as a disclaimer, I am a computer scientist. My research area is machine learning and data mining.
And I do medical image analysis, and part of my work uses deep learning.
So we would consider ourselves professional. This area, as a disclaimer, we would consider ourselves only as amateur theologians and philosophers, so please bear with us when it comes to these topics. And perhaps as a last introductory comment, this presentation grew out of a lecture series called God and Reason that myself and some other Christian professors have been offering at Simon Fraser University now for quite a few years. So this is kind of the improved version of the talk in this lecture series. Okay. So, artificial intelligence, are we just machines? Artificial intelligence has caught the attention of the media in the last few years all over the world. I just collected a few headlines from the last few years. IBM's Watson beats champion Ken Jennings on the trivia show Jeopardy. More recently, DeepMind, the Google DeepMind algorithm has taught itself and has been able to beat the world's best Go player. Self-driving cars being tested on more and more realistic settings all over the world, in particular, but not only North America. AI algorithms smart enough to fool the capture security check, which was meant to distinguish robots from actual humans. And more speculatively, I mean, these are things that have all happened already, right? And, but just to give you one example of more futuristic, more science fiction-like predictions of some leaders in the area of artificial intelligence, here at the bottom, Ray Kurzweil, Director of Engineering at Google. He claims that AI will be smarter than humans by 2029 and will eventually merge with machines. Now, so this is a stage for our presentation. And in this presentation, we basically have two questions that we want to answer. We want to give you at least a very short introduction into artificial intelligence in order to enable us to get a better understanding of how AI works and what it can do and what likely it will not be able to do. And then we are moving on to the second question. We relate AI to humans, right? What's the relationship? Is AI going to develop human-like machines? Is it going to develop artificial conscience, artificial humans, or perhaps even superhumans, right? Related to the question of the previous presentation in the first session this afternoon, transhumanism, right? I mean, there are certainly very strong connections here. Okay. What is artificial intelligence? Well, it's the attempt to produce intelligent behavior on machines rather than on natural beings. And now, of course, one of the problems in defining artificial intelligence is that intelligence in itself is a very fuzzy term, right? And if you hold you guys here in the room, right, we would probably come up with, well, 34 different definitions of intelligence, right? Now, some people in particular, I mean, in the area of artificial intelligence have defined it as the ability to solve problems with limited resources, right? So the keyword here, solve problems and limited resources. Now, in the area of computer science, that is referred to commonly as artificial intelligence, people have distinguished certain AI tasks, the problems that one wants to solve on a computer. And the main problems here are reasoning, learning, natural language processing, for example, automatically translating text from one language into another text. Computer vision, for example, the task to detect a certain object on an image. And last but not least, robotics. One of the examples would be a robot that autonomously drives a car. Right now, if you talk about artificial intelligence, sooner or later you would encounter one test that has been introduced long, long, long time ago by one of the founders of the discipline of artificial intelligence to distinguish humans from machines. Alan Turing, back in 1950 already, he proposed the so-called Turing test. Test the ability of a machine to perform intelligent behavior equivalent to that of a human. The test works as follows. You have a human evaluator is confronted with a human and a computer. And though the human and the computer, they both hide behind some text only or keyboard, kind of keyboard-like interface. So the evaluator asks question to both the human and the machine at the same time through this keyboard, and then receives the answers, and then the human evaluator must answer this question, which one is a computer, which one is the human. And if the evaluator fails to distinguish them, then the machine is supposed to have passed that Turing test. Now, that Turing test has been widely used, has been very influential. On the other hand, there have been some serious criticism. So people have in particular criticized that the Turing test depends heavily on the judgment of the evaluator, which is, of course, very subjective. Some people have challenged the idea of comparing computers and humans to begin with, and some people have pointed out that the test compares only the behavior, the ability to process information. It's a very functional view, and this is actually one of the criticisms I would certainly share. Right? It considers both the human just as a black box. You put in a certain you provide certain input, you expect a certain output. As long as you can translate the input into the desired output, this would be considered to be human, right? I mean, this is a very computational approach, right? This is exactly how we view computers, but we would probably not view humans. Now, a very brief introduction into the history of AI in order to better understand what it can do and what it cannot do. The first generation of artificial intelligence was exemplified by so-called expert systems. These were systems that used hard-coded rules and facts, so-called knowledge bases, to perform certain tasks, for example, medical diagnosis. Now, these systems, by and large, failed miserably because they could not deal with unforeseen cases. Now, the second, or perhaps already third generation of artificial intelligence is now based on machine learning. You may have encountered this term. So, a machine learning is a computer system or program that can learn from examples. Because of that capability, can generalize to unforeseen cases, and you can actually combine these two approaches if necessary. But the emergence and the amazing progress in machine learning, I think that's consensus among most AI researchers, it lies at the heart of the recent breakthroughs in artificial intelligence. Now, let's explain a bit more the essence of machine learning, because it is indeed so fundamental to understand artificial intelligence. The approach is that you basically train a computer program. You provide the program a lot of examples. I mean, for example, we mentioned the example of object recognition. So you provide Google with a large number of images, and you label these images. So you tell Google, this is the image of a dog, this is the image of a wolf, this is the image of a bird, and so forth. Right? And now, the machine learning system learns correlation between certain features of the input, the image in this case, and the class label, the name or the type of the object. And then you basically apply the model that you've trained on some test cases in which you, of course, you only provide the image, right? Now the computer program needs to estimate, predict the label type of object, for example, displayed in that image, right? Now, another keyword, the last, I promise, this is the last technical keyword that we are going to introduce here, deep neural networks. Who has ever heard of deep neural networks or deep learning? Oh, welcome to the club. deep neural networks is one type of machine learning. Actually, it's almost an ancient approach, neural networks, right? But recently, for various reasons, deep neural networks have achieved some major breakthroughs. Deep neural networks are loosely inspired by neuroscience, so the nodes in the deep neural network correspond roughly to the neurons in a human brain, and the links between nodes correspond to the synapses in your and my brain. And basically, the links are associated with weights. These are the parameters of the model that you learn, right? The structure of the model is given as input. The only thing that the model actually learns are the weights associated with these things, the importance of certain inputs and certain propagations in that network. Okay, so this is, if you know deep neural networks already, this would not be your first deep neural networks. For the other ones, this is the first toy neural network here, right? This is how it works. We have the input layer here at the top. That's where you feed in, for example, your example image. Then you basically, this node here, for example, takes the weighted sum of the input nodes that are connected, right? Apply some non-linear function to convert the input into some output, and then you feed the output to the next layer, which in this case would already be the output layer, right? So it's a relatively simple application of mathematical function. You feed the input step by step forward from the input to the output. You produce some output, for example, that fast label of that image, right? Here on the right-hand side, this illustrates an extremely simple neural network. Here we go from the bottom to the top. This is a deep neural network that learns an XOR function of two inputs, X and Y. And this is, I put this here because this here, we see the weights that are associated with the edges, these, right? The whole structure, the topology of the network is provided by the human expert, and then the machine learning method, or the machine itself, learns the appropriate weights to approximate this. And how do we learn the weights? Well, it's basically, it's an optimization problem, right? You define an objective function. This is the last slide with some formulas on it, I promise. So to formulate a bit more rigorously, so what in the training phase, we have a set of training examples, xi, ti. Xi is the feature vector, for example, the image. Ti is the label, the type of object, for example, that you find in the image, right? Now you have many such pairs of feature or image and the label, and the deep neural network learns the weight and maximizes the prediction error on the training data, right? And this is kind of here the prediction error. You let the deep neural network, you apply the deep neural network to your image, makes a prediction. Now for the training data set, you know the ground truth, the true class label of that image, right? You compare the prediction against the ground truth and you compute some error. Then you adjust the weights in a way that you reduce the error, right? And that's you feed the sequence of possibly a million images into that deep neural network to incrementally, step by step, improve the weights of your deep neural network to improve your prediction capability. That's how a deep neural network works. Okay, now, given the amazing success of artificial intelligence, as researchers in general, but in particular as Christians, we need to ask ourselves the question, are machines becoming human? Or perhaps at the lower level, will machines become conscious? Or even human, or perhaps even superhuman, right? Now, the first conclusion that we want to draw here is that having given you a brief introduction into deep neural networks, right? We have tried to demystify them, right? If you look at this, right, it's just optimization. So machines learn the parameters which optimize the objective function. So on one hand, you need a supervisor to provide the topology of the network. You also need a supervisor to produce the set of provide the training examples. So that means the human plays an amazing role in that process of training. Now, approach to ask that. Now moving on to that question: what does it mean to be a human? Right? If you want to answer this question, right? Let's perform a first thought experiment. Let's consider a baby. Right? A baby cannot perform intelligent tasks. Right? Could not identify, for example, the objects on an image. Right? Or a comatose patient can no longer perform intelligent tasks. Would we consider them not human, or would we consider them to be less human, or probably not, right? So that means that we would reject this very functional view of a human, right? It's not just a black box that produces a proper output that can produce intelligent tasks. This is not the essence of being human, right? On the other hand, we would say the origin plays a role, coming into existence in a certain way. That's a very high level position. Now I'll pass it on.
Okay. So then the question is, why all the fears of machine overloads and runaway AI? Because according to the previous slide, a machine will be always a machine and a human will be always a human. So now the question becomes not simply about intelligence, because your calculator will be able to do calculations so much better than you do, and then it'll be more intelligent in a sense, but then it's the question about self-awareness, consciousness, free will, mind, in the sense that the machines are becoming independent agent to feel, experience, and act subjectively. So that's at the kind of the core of this fear of machine overloads. So all the related questions include some of the related questions include, should machines be considered persons? Should they have ethical, legal responsibilities? If the driverless car kills someone, should the algorithm take some kind of legal responsibility? Do they have legal rights? So all these kind of at the heart of these questions would be, is machine considered a person, an independent agent? So we know that the consciousness, the definition of it is, there's a broadly shared intuition, but exact definition is very difficult and hotly debated. So the general kind of common definition would be freedom to choose, response to stimulus, self-awareness, imagination, conscious, and independent will. So how to apply this already fuzzy concept to machines and also animals? And then also there are problems like philosophical zombie and Chinese room, where a machine may react in exactly the same way a human does, but can we say that the machine is conscious? So we see that there are three related questions to this issue, which is, one is, what is consciousness? The second is, what is machine consciousness? The third is, can we create a conscious machine or artificial mind? So one view to take is that consciousness is something that's purely physical, that we are just machines. And therefore, the difference between the human and the machine would be only physical, and therefore it would be theoretically possible to create artificial consciousness. So this view is called monism or physicalism. So it states the only physical world is real, and what we define as consciousness is only an emergent property of complex physical systems like our brain. And some physicalists say that all physical systems, essentially physical mass, they are all conscious, and minds can be possibly created artificially. So this is more Western philosophical approach. And another approach would be that the consciousness is not purely physical, and therefore the difference between human and machine is more than physical, and therefore it is impossible to physically create an artificial consciousness. So this is dualism that states that consciousness is a separate ontological reality. Physical world comes into existence only through thoughts of a conscious being. And what a human is, not only its behavior function, but something inside the box. So this is more of an Eastern philosophical approach. So the Christian worldview is closer to dualism, but it's even more complex. So in the Bible, we have references to body, mind, and soul. So body includes physical self, including the brain. Mind includes thoughts and consciousness, and the soul is a part of the related God. Another kind of a structure could be body, soul, and spirit. So in this context, the consciousness is part of the soul, and spirit is the part that we have relationship with God and connect with God. So there are various references in the Bible regarding this separate, different parts of human beings. But we can see that the biblical point of view is a human is a very composite and holistic kind of being. So to wrap up the presentation, another thought experiment could be, can we dump the state of a human brain onto a CPU of a robot? And can you say the robot is conscious? Will it have the same identity as a human? And will it have a will? So if you're a physicalist, the answer to the question, all these questions would be yes, of course. But if you are a dualist, then you'd say no, because the physical component of a being or a person is not all of the person. So in conclusion, AI systems will achieve human or superhuman performance in many tests that require intelligence. But a machine performing intelligent tests does not mean it has free will or consciousness or self-awareness. A computer that functions like a human is still not a human, and a human who does not function anymore is still a human. As Christians, we believe that consciousness and human nature are not simply physical and cannot be created artificially. And lastly, Christians should engage in the dialogues that are happening in our society. Thank you.
So we have time for maybe two quick questions, and I'll let you select.
Just in terms of terminology, I wouldn't identify physicalism with monism, because there are sort of non-physicalist monisms, especially neutral monism, where you think there's only one substance, but physics doesn't completely describe it.
Right.
And also, in a similar vein, identifying a Christian view or a dualist view is also, you know, contentious. I mean, I would think that neutral monism is a very good Christian view to take.
Thank you.
Very
amateur.
Well, we will certainly not identify the Christian worldview with a dualist worldview. Right? We said we go. I mean, I think there's a question we go beyond this, right?
Okay. Yeah.
My only question was, as Christians, do you think there should be more discussion about this kind of problem with the public, or is it something that we should be having in the church instead? Like artificial intelligence, what does it mean to be human, that kind of thing? Like, is this an act?
Both. I think we need to demystify it, right? And we need to use it. It can be very beneficial. I mean, I myself, I do research, a lot of research with biomedical applications. I mean, the systems that we are building right now are already better in diagnosing cancer than any living physician, right? But we shouldn't be afraid of them, but of course we don't want to support all these trends in, right? We don't expect the salvation of the world from artificial intelligence, to put it bluntly.
So one real quick question. The triumph of the computer over the gold master has been hyped as a result of deep learning, where the computer actually plays itself millions of games without supervision. Now, you were talking about deep learning as being supervised, and that being one of the reasons why we don't want to claim that a computational system of any architecture is going to become human in any way. is this a misconstrual of the means to conquering the human master as an unsupervised self-playing deep learning net, or are there unsupervised deep learning nets that can teach themselves without human supervision?
Well, I mean, playing a game is different, right? Because you know exactly, I mean, it's easy to assess the result, right? You know whether you win or lose, right? But in the medical diagnosis, right, you need to know, right? You need to know how to interpret the result, right? You need to have some ground truth, right? So game playing is different in that sense, right? So this machine was, in a sense, unsupervised. But still, right, somebody still had to determine the architecture of the system. Somebody still has to do the hyperparameter tuning and so forth, right? Even
to define what winning is.
No. To pick the topology of the network, to there's a lot of so-called hyperparameters, dropout, regularization, and so forth. I mean, there's a myriad of different choices in the design of the deep neural network that the computer cannot do by itself.
But it can determine what the point of winning, the criteria of winning.
That's easy.
On its own.
Well, if you program that, I mean.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I'm asking.
That's easy, yeah. In that sense, game playing is different from any other practical application.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.